Bei unserem letzten Kundenevent in Dubai haben wir zwei externe Speaker gehabt, absolut magische Menschen, Chris Biermann und James Blackwell, zwei ultimativ erfahrene Unternehmer, wo wir darüber gesprochen haben, wie man besseres Leadership aufbaut, bessere Teams, eine bessere Firma, besser im Sales wird, besseres Mindset hat und so weiter und so fort. Wir haben 25 Leute beim Event gehabt. Sehr, sehr viele haben gesagt, das war ihr absolutes Highlight vom Event und deshalb viel Spaß beim Anschauen vom Video.
Was war denn, wir geben das Playbook, unser Sales-Team-Playbook, kostenlos her? Leute, crazy. Unter diesem Video kriegt ihr unser Sales-Team-Playbook, wie wir innerhalb von 30 Monaten ein Sales-Team aufgebaut haben, was nachhaltig 600.000 Euro Monatsumsatz macht. Absurd crazy, geben wir komplett kostenlos her. Recruiting, Know-how, Verständnis von Provisionssystemen und allen möglichen Sachen, da fliegt sogar das Mikro rum, wie krass das ist. Deshalb, wenn du ein Sales-Team aufbauen möchtest, klick unter diesem Video auf den Link und hol dir unser Sales-Team-Playbook. Absurd magisch.
I would say James is one of the people I learned the most of how to be more tough on leadership and be not too easy on people and demand more of them. He learned a lot also from Dan Pena. Maybe somebody knows Dan Pena. He's a funny screaming guy. What would you say if we say we talk to a lot of agency owners that have a team that are too soft on their team? What beliefs do you think they need to implement better? And when are you too tough to people? When are you not too tough? And how to not lose a team if you go tough on them?
I think obviously when you're scaling an agency, you need to lead by example for sure. So obviously you need to be the one that's working hard in the business and driving the success. When you're pushing hard, you also need to be likable as well. So like for me, it was always having that balance between knowing each individual employee, so who their husband or wife is, the kids, understanding these things, like on a weekend, like speaking to them on WhatsApp, being a little bit flexible when they go through difficult situations, but also like pressing hard when like expectations aren't being met. So we have like strict standards in terms of you are the average of like the standards that you accept in life. Like you always want to keep raising that bar. So as the business gets more successful, you do, the employees need to come with you. And one of the key things that I used to do is when I fire someone, I would make everyone else know and call a team meeting and explain why that person was getting fired. Because if you let little things, like someone that get away with little things compared to everyone else, that causes like a big cancer in your business. So I always call that person out in front of everyone else and say that this is the reason why this person got fired, because we don't expect that standard in the business. So that was probably a few times that happens. Like, I mean, my journey has been over the last 10 years scaling my businesses. I've hired and fired many people and I've learned so much over that time. And you get a good intuition and feeling of the energy with like the type of people that you hire. So little things that I look for, nuances, is on Slack. Like when there's a green light on, like I know that person's, if they're replying straight away, for example, or they're replying in the sales team chat when there's a deal, everyone else is like cheering it on. And so I'll always notice if someone's been a little bit quiet, like less responsive, I'll get me or one of the team to do a little bit digging. I'll inspect something if I feel there's a problem, but I leave that person to do as they wish. So give them freedom and autonomy. But also if I know that this person needs micromanaged, I know they're not a person that I'm going to have in the business long term, because I'm not a manager myself, even though like in my agency, I was in an office for the first 5-6 years with a team of like 12-13 employees in the physical office every single day. And they got a time when like some of the employees that I had at the time I didn't like, so I didn't want to go in the office. I was hiding in my office, like not wanting to be there. And I was like, you are the business that you create yourself. So I changed that. So I started hiring the right type of personalities in the business, because it's important that you need to build a good culture. And culture is not something that you can make a quick hack on. I think it's just been, you need to grow yourself. So as I've grown my businesses and myself, people started liking me more of like seeing how far I've come. So they want to attach on to that and they can take the tailwind of me driving my business to success. They improve themselves. So little things for employees will be personal development. So I let them buy as many books as they want on Amazon or Kindle. I used to do like CEO talks every single week and teaching them things that I've learned from mentors and masterminds and programs and teaching that in my employees. And that gets easier over time, because as you build like a personal brand and you get really successful, people just want to work for me, because it's like, well, if he's a multimillionaire now, even if I learn at the bottom as a setter or a closer or in one of the teams, like, it will rub off, because success definitely leaves clues, as my old mentor Dan Pena used to say. But I think, there's a balance. I mean, when I worked in previous businesses, it was very Wolf of Wall Street, suited and booted. I was in the office 7 a.m, leaving at 9, 10 p.m. It was drilled into me. It was like business boot camp, as it were, for many years. So I have that balance between being able to be tough when is needed, no bullshit, because I can see through it. So you just need to, you'll all know in your subconscious mind, you know, like that employee that'll just niggle away at you, sleepless nights. You're moaning to your partner on a weekend about them, or they're getting you really frustrated about certain things they've done. My biggest advice is just fire fast. I know I've had these conversations with Stefan many times of like making him fire some of his employees. And he was maybe a little bit too nice and giving them a little bit more time, and maybe 6 months, 9 months down the line, I was like, you need to just fire that person, because it's not going to change. Like, once you get that little intuition of like, then you're not happy with that employee, or they're not performing, from my experience, the chances of them turning around are 0.01%. So just fire them. Don't waste your time and energy trying to improve someone, because if their attitude's not right and they're not showing up correctly, you're not going to change that.
Do you have, in the hiring process, like key questions, if the answer right or wrong, that you're not going to hire them?
Yeah, no. Like, I've been through all of it, Myers-Briggs testing, like which we still do. But interviews, I will look at track record, meet the person in the face-to-face, look in the eye, see what their energy is like, see what people that follow, what they do, what their daily habits are. So I'm big on like what their internal beliefs are, where they want to go, what their goals are. If they're clear on the direction, they've got a purpose, they've got a drive, they want to be successful, they've shown that they've worked in maybe different environments to hustle, like whether it's sales or success. So they want the money, but also they're prepared to do the work, and they're conscientious. So like the only number one thing I look for in my business is conscientiousness. So these are the things, like my best employees, I tell them something once, so I never need to tell them again.
Bro, can you explain what conscientiousness means?
Simple thing would be like, let's say you're in an office environment and your employees come in and notice like a light bulb's out. That one person that notices it orders the light bulb and just gets changed the next day. Like that type of thing, without me saying, can someone fix the light bulb, for example? Like, I know some of my employees that have gone my business will just fix it without me even saying anything.
How do you get it not to be too buddy? It's very difficult not to be on the one side only the boss and not the buddy, because I don't know, how do you handle this?
It's a fine balance. So like, you're not going to hang around with them on the weekends, for example. You're not going to follow them on social media accounts. So you just try and create that little bit of barrier. You're finding out like about the personal life, but also like, you never call them mate, never call them bro or anything else. Like, it's try and maintain that professionalism is what I do, but also just be a little bit soft if they're going through a tough time. Or I'm more softer with the people that perform well in my business, so I give them more flexibility. I might give them more time off or extra things. And if someone else calls me out on that, I say, well, if you perform in the business, this is how you get treated. I actually do give more preferential treatment to the better performers. So my A players that are conscientious, that turn up, work on weekend, like doing these above and beyond, I give special more attention to. And I make sure the others like understand that. So that's like quite important as well. But yeah, like the relationship side, it's better to be more business oriented in terms of like tough than trying to be their friend.
So right now you have, like, as I hear, a team of like a lot of people, and there was probably a stage where you had like only a little people and you started a journey of like getting people on board. Can you maybe talk a bit on like this first step? Like, when was the time? How did you handle and how did you feel?
For those of you that don't know, so like I've got three different companies, so like two recruitment agencies and an online coaching business. And so we have 24, 25 remote employees, and I've got 12 in the office. So what, 35, 36 in total? Good question. So like when I first started the office, I brought my younger brother on. He was like 18 at the time, and it was just us in a little like two-man office. And then we hired our first two employees. And then we started going to a bigger office, which was like for 10 employees. And that, when I started hiring then, I remember these times when I had to fire someone. I was so anxious. I was shaking. I couldn't speak out my voice. I was having sleepless nights just to fire someone, for example, and manage them. And that comes from just growth. So putting yourself outside your comfort zone, like working on your personal development is very, very important. So your mindset. So the more you're working on your mindset every single day, and the more you're growing, then the more confidence you'll have of like leading a team. I really don't think there's a leadership course out there, to be honest. Like, it really comes from experience, being more successful in your personal life and business life, that gives more confidence. So the more money I made, the better person I became, the more confident I was with my team, if not taking bullshit and saying it how it is and leading by example. It's very hard to be a leader if you, for instance, haven't made much money and you haven't really grown as a person and you haven't got the spiritual development and mindset. It's inauthentic and people will see through that. So that's why it's very important that you should be working on yourself every single day. Even myself now, I spend 2-3 hours every single day reading, learning all of the time because I'm always wanting to get ahead. But yeah, the start is like I was probably more friendly and pally with some of like the smaller teams. So like doing lunches together, team nights on together, bonding. We had table tennis table. I would always be putting YouTube motivation on at the start of the morning to get people pumped up. So I spent a lot of time and energy at the start. It is quite tough, like building a culture, especially I think Stefan was saying most of you have just a remote team. So when you're not actually in an office, it's very hard to build that rapport and relationship with employees. We've managed to do it on the business, like with the 25 remote employees, but I'll try and fly them out twice a year, whether it's to Dubai, London, etc. We have very intense, not intense, but like meetings every day on Zoom, and then they'll have different department meetings and then those type of things. But yeah, like I learned it all from having an office first, I would say, is like then it makes it easier to transition into a remote team and really build like a team culture at the start. When your employees asking for more money, they need to bring me more revenue, more profit. So if they can open up a new profit center and say like, and be honest with them, transparent in the business, this is where the profit is right now and this is where you contribute. So if you've got a new contribution that you can bring to the business and you want to run it and be responsible, what more are you going to give me? So if I'm going to give you more money, what do I get in return? And it needs to be a trade-off. So it's either you're going to be working more hours, you're going to be working harder and adding more value to the company, but you don't just get a pay rise just because you feel you're entitled to one. And normally the better employees will come with a plan initially anyway. They won't just ask for more money. It's normally a red flag for me if someone's just saying, I need more money. Like, you should know if someone's paid market rate or not. And yeah, like, again, like, I know we've had these conversations. I think Stefan's in the past maybe overpaid for certain employees. And obviously the market's different maybe in Germany. But I always feel like all my businesses, I've never really brought in a really expensive employee. Like, when I say expensive, no one's been on my payroll over 80K salary, yeah, for example. So there's no like massive, because I always feel like these people are overpaid. You're paying them for past experience. So whatever they've achieved in the past, you're paying the cost for. So that's why I like bringing on more younger, hungrier people, because they will work hard, and then the more increases they get, the more valued and bought in they are to you and the team and the culture and the journey. Bringing in someone at the top coming in, it's very, very hard to bed them in and get them profitable, and they become more entitled and a higher cost, which puts more stress on you because it's a big capital expense every single month.
And also, if we talk about leadership, it's not only the thing how you lead people. One thing that James is, I would say, exceptionally well is leading his numbers, knowing every month how much profit you exactly make, and really are dialing in his own numbers and optimizing for that. I see a lot of people not knowing their numbers in details, not knowing their profits, not optimizing for them, not optimizing for proper growth, but what do you think are your routines for understanding your numbers? I don't know anybody who runs through so many numbers. And at the same time, in the German market, you all guys know the German market, there are hardly any people that make as much profit, I would say, as you do. So
one thing I learned from a mentor many years ago was cash is king, like always watch the cash flow. So like a lot of people get obsessed with these revenue numbers of hitting 100K months, $1 million months and all of these things. But it all comes down to like how much money you make at the end of the month. So I always I still do check the bank accounts every single day. You want to know what's coming in, what outstanding invoices you got, what revenue's coming in, what the profit is, what the costs. Like, so I have like different spreadsheets and different reports, and then I get my assistant to send me a daily P&L sheet of what cash has came in, what cash has came out. So I'm always on the pulse with the numbers. It's very, very important, because how I manage my businesses is like maybe a little bit from afar, and I just dive in if I know there's a problem. So if I can see there's a problem on the front end sales or the back end sales or profitability, maybe we're spending too much on ads or these type of things, that's where I focus my efforts and energy in the business. But like, we're all in business for creating freedom for ourselves, financial freedom, personal freedom to work when we want, where we want. And the business should be there to serve us, not us serve the business. And I think a lot of people start an agency, myself included, was like on an ego thing of how many employees I've got or what big clients that I've won. Just because you win a big client doesn't mean it's going to make you profitable. Like, it might make you look good because you put their logo on the website, but like, if it's not putting cash in the pocket at the end of the month, what's the point? So just being very obsessed with just money, I love, so I'm very obsessed with just making money. So like, that's always been a key thing for me. So I'm less actually long term. Like, people would be like, oh, well, if I do this and that, and then 5 years time, then I can exit and sell. Well, it's not like, how much money am I going to make this exact month? I am still actually very month to month and quarter to quarter in the business. I'm not like, I don't plan 2-3 years out thinking of the growth. I'm like, well, no, how much money am I going to make cash this month for the next quarter? That's like, and I've always been like that for the last 10 years. It served me well for sure, but just being obsessed with actually making money every month. Not, you shouldn't be making sacrifices now for 3, 4, 5 months time. It should be like, well, how much cash can you get in the bank now? So I would just say, be obsessed with the numbers. You need to know it. Like, even some of my clients that I teach, recruitment agencies, they don't have a spreadsheet of the numbers. Like, I've still tracked every single revenue deal that we've came in on all my businesses for the last 10 years. So I know the lifetime value of a customer, how long it takes on average for them to pay me. And I'm obsessed until I get that money physically in my bank account, then the deal's not done. So I'm making sure we're on top of that. So don't be like going to win a new client when you've got other clients that you've already got, but you still haven't got paid. I'll be spending that time chasing the invoice, making up like a CFO you've got in your business and creating a new email address to try and collect that revenue. But yeah, cash is king for sure. And especially in small businesses, that's why most of them fail, is because you keep getting obsessed with the revenue numbers and winning these big clients. But it's like, no, like, you need to make sure you get paid first and you make profit.
I would say I'm the totally opposite of Dennis with my employees. I'm totally like a buddy. Then what would you say, how can I go back more like leader and not like be the best friend of them without their feeling a little bit weird?
Good question. I mean, just be the person, like, become the person that you want to be, like the future self of who you want to create. And that person, who does that person look like? Is he just going to be someone that's going to be pally with everyone in business? No, like, you're going to be a real business owner. So might start off with like upgrading your peer group, maybe dressing for success. So like, once you start to make physical changes of your appearance and stuff, then it's like, okay, this guy's serious now. And the more you work on your mindset and different things, then you can just be a little bit more less responsive to them in WhatsApp. Don't try and hang out with them, don't go drinking with them, these type of things. I learned this from an early age in my businesses and other mentors of like, I wouldn't go out just drinking with them and put my arm around them and being really pally with them. Like, you need to be a bit mysterious, I would say. Like, I'm always like never too close to any of my employees. It's like, even when I bring them here to Dubai, I'll take them out now and again, but I won't get drunk, and then I'll be the one that probably leaves early, or like, I'm not going to get like in intimate deep conversations with them and stuff like that. You've got to have that because obviously you might have to fire them one day or have a difficult conversation. Can't do that with like when you're being their friend. It just makes it really hard, even more for you emotionally. So you want to make sure you're detached. I would start maybe just changing the way you dress, your mindset, what you're working on, and just be less responsive to them and a little bit more abrupt. And you can say, look, like, I'm a serious business owner. I value you. I want to take this business to XYZ. But to do that, like, I need to become a real CEO of the business, and just start to build a little bit of a barrier over time with the employees.
Can I just jump in on that? Because most of my employees for, I would think, the first maybe 3 to 4 years were some of my best friends. So that was one of the biggest issues that I faced. And a few strategic tips that I used was never communicate with them about business on the same platform, WhatsApp. And like, even to this day, I had a guy, Liam, who was staying with me. He's one of my main closers, but he's been a friend of mine, I would say, for 6 years. We could be having two different conversations, one on WhatsApp, one on Slack. And I'm like, if he says anything to do with business on WhatsApp, I don't reply. If it's anything personal on Slack, I don't reply. I know that sounds really silly, but I think maybe four of my first employees were great friends that I had. And doing that is a small psychological step, but it makes a big difference because for some people, they'll find that difficult. For me, I can completely compartmentalize my personal life and my business. So I can absolutely roast someone on Slack. And then 30 minutes later, I can say, hey, hope everything, like something, like it's almost like a split personality. And they just became used to me doing that. So if you're in the situation now where you need to try and make that change, my advice would be when you go back, say, have a conversation with them and say, listen, I'm not serving you having a friend employee relationship without pushing you when you need to be pushed, but also I don't want it to affect our friendship. So I think it would be a good idea for us to double down on the friendship stuff over here and double down on business over here, because I want you to make the money that you want to make. And I don't want our, the fact that we have, I would say, the beauty of having both relationships to negatively impact the other, if that makes sense.
And also one thing I would add to that is if you want to, like, if you know who you have to become for the next level in your business, let's say you need to be more tough in leadership, more straight, stuff like that. And then you might have a fear, oh, what if the person doesn't like it? Yeah. Then it's like, that's normal. It's like in personal life. Once you changed, some people didn't like your change. That's fine. That's part of life. Life, people move on and you need to move on. So if you change as a leader in a leadership style you have to be, and some people don't like that, then you need to have a conversation with them. That's how it's going to be. And if they don't like that, then you need to basically replace them. That's the easy process, because you can't build a business around people. You need to build a business and people to build the business, but you can't build a business around how some people want you to behave. So you need to change and be certain about that and be in abundance about that and be clear about that. And then if people follow, that's great. If some people don't follow, that's how it is.
Just one question, like, if you say, okay, your sales guy is one of your best friends, if you have two different...
I own the business. And like, there's, just because we're friends, if I ask him to dress in a clown suit and take a Zoom call, I run the business. So he can choose to be an employee or not. So like, but the frame is different for me because people don't work for me. People work with me. And very similar, and I would say I'm a mentee of James in lots of ways, although we're friends. Myself and Stefan look a lot at what James does. And the relationship that I started to build with my employees over the last number of years is that you're working with me. How can I help you hit your financial goals? Just like James said, once your business is designed in a way that the more money they make, the more money your business makes without it taking away from profits, which is why obviously a commission structure in some areas of the business is useful, is I say to my employees all of the time, how can I help you perform so you make the money that you want to make out of this business? The analogy that I use is, I'm giving you the keys to a Ferrari. You take it wherever you want to go. If you want to go around the block once, that's fine. If you want to drive to Monaco, that's fine. But here are the keys in the analogy of this is the role. Your job is to extract whatever you need financially from this role. But I have the business structured in a you know, commission structure that works. And if they're not performing, I say, listen, you're not making the money you want to make. Instead of them pointing the finger at me or the business, they have to identify that they're not performing. So I will say, how can I help you do that? And in lots of ways, like, yeah, we have differing opinions all the time, but I think setting a very strong precedence that, and I've had very difficult conversations like James, where I will give an opinion on something and an employee will give one employee in particular. He will say, I don't agree. I'm like, I thought you wouldn't agree. But I said, I've been employing you for 6 years. You've not been employing me for 6 years. And there's a reason. And yeah, some decisions I make aren't great. but most have got us to this point. If you want to hire me in the future, best of luck. But right now, I'm leading the ship, and this is the way it's running. If it turns out not to be good, we'll cross that bridge when it does. But you also have to lead by example. And if you do make poor decisions, you know, if you're showing someone the way to a certain place and you keep getting lost all of the time, they lose confidence in your leadership. So that compounds over time, I think.
And also you have to think like you are paying the bills. Let's say like you make a decision and you're losing a big client and that costs you a lot of money. If that happens, the employee doesn't pay the bill, you pay the bill. So in the end of the day, you are responsible for the business. You are responsible for everybody to get paid, for everybody to have food on the table. So you are responsible at the end of the day. So the employee is not responsible for everybody to get food. You are responsible for that.
We were talking about 100K on the bank account. What's your first goal? What's the time when you said, now I feel comfortable, I'm not anymore afraid to be broke? Is there a specific number you can name it, or is it like a situation?
Yeah, like 100K net cash reserves was a really good feeling because that meant I could pay employees for 4, 5, 6 months. So we got good runway in terms of burn rate. But like the real feeling is obviously when you get 1 million liquid in your personal bank account, like after tax and everything else in your bank, then that's probably the best feeling, like the FU money type of thing. And then obviously as it compounds and you make more money over then you never have to worry. So I would say like the 100K in your bank business first as a startup, and then it's just always working to that goal of like, how can I get it to 1 million liquid in my personal bank account? And so you can physically see it in your bank and then you invest it. That's like probably the best like secure feeling you will feel, where any decision, whether your business fucks up for 12 months or all employees leave, then you're not going to be as worried, and you can be more ballsy with like hiring. Because I think most business owners, and I can speak from the ones I mentor as well, when we do these masterminds, is people have this big fear of hiring employees. That's probably the main thing. Like, you need to be comfortable with like investing. You're using that money to invest in employees to grow.
And the second one, you were also talking about an emotional bank account. What the specific moment when you changed your mind completely to be like that? What you are to be that? What you're gonna be or what you are to be today?
I started my agency when I was like 28. So probably from then, and then I was just very heavy personal development. I was working 60, 70 hours a week in the agency, taking a risk on a £10,000 credit card, and just obsessed with learning and hunger and knowledge, because I wasn't academically very clever at school. Like, I didn't stay on after school or go to university. So all my success came down to just hard work and personal development after that. There's not like one shift. I had many mentors and went through a lot of different stages, but I think like creating that future self of what that looked like and who I wanted to become, and modeling myself on like different billionaires of like autobiographies I would read. So James Goldsmith being one of them, Felix Dennis, How to Get Rich, another. Like these books I read time and time again, of like wanting luxury homes around the world, flying private, having a big business, being respected as a business owner, being in the Financial Times top 100 wealthy entrepreneurs, all of these things I was programming my mind to, and reading these affirmations every single day was very important. I was like rewiring my brain basically, because I had a lot of party years and hung around with losers as well. And so once I started upgrading my peer group in terms of being around, I was around older people on the golf course that were multimillionaires, turned into helping me be mentors. I just changed like the friendship group. So all my friends now, I've got no friends from back home. I think I got one. I cut off everyone. I don't, and that's no disrespect to them. I'm just on a different journey. So I'm ruthless with that now, even with my time in Dubai. There's more people that come here, want to meet me for coffee. I haven't got time for them, like emotionally and time. So I've got friends that are billionaires that I've sat around tables with that love my company and we build friendships with. So the more you surround yourself with wealthier people that are in the same mindset as you, that's probably the biggest thing, because that compounds over time. But yeah, there's not the one like moment as such. It was just, it definitely is the 10,000 hour rule, where it just compounds every day. So learning 4 or 5 hours every single day, applying it in business. So like theory is nothing unless you can put it in action. So just taking action time and time again in your business to make money. And then surrounding yourself and changing the environment was good as well. Obviously, I got to being a millionaire in Newcastle, but after that, and I got the nice cars and everything else and watches and doing all these things, it was just around a poor environment. There wasn't many other successful people there. I was like, I need to move. So that's when I moved to Dubai. And then I was one of the poorest again, and that forced me to be rich because I was hanging around with people that were worth like 30, 40 million and flying private and all of these things. So that forced me to elevate my success even more. So,
and during this process, you build up your barrier to self-protection from the old life which you used to have.
Yeah. Dampenya's castle I went to for 8 days, that was a really good moment. That was like 2 or 3 years in my recruitment business back then. And I remember having the one-on-one with Dan. He was like, shut the business down, fucking a failure. I think I was making maybe 500k a year or something. And I thought that was a lot of money. He was like, it's nothing. So just shut it down and all this type of thing. So that helped, like even to this day, it's helped me with the emotional side. If like it's, business is tough and you need to like, it's ruthless. So you need to be really cutthroat in terms of like certain aspects.
And maybe as it sounds maybe very tough on some people, like I would say James is one of the best value people I know in terms of taking care of people, in terms of being honest, in terms of being good as a person. So you can be very good values, in my personal opinion, you can be very good values and at the same time be tough. Yeah, that's it's not like one or the other. It's like if you maybe follow football or something like that, there are soccer football coaches that are very straight, very direct, very understand how to run a team. Let's say, for example, Pep Guardiola is a big coach. And he's very, if you listen to interviews, you understand he's not like a wazi person who's like, everybody's nice, everybody's good. He's very direct, very straight, very, and that's just to give you a context about that, because it might sound very straight, but it's not like, you can have very good values, taking care of your team, taking care of your people, taking care of your family, of your friends, and still be very direct and not tolerate bullshit.
What's your opinion about overhiring, or how fast would you hire and how much profit you need to save? Like, in my opinion, we make like 30k profit each month. So it's a smaller business, but I don't think, should I stack my profit and wait to a moment to hire, or be as fast as possible, hire and maybe overhire one employee, so have two of them to get to the next level and don't stuck at these.
Just to give you more context, his bank account is filled and he's on this level for a long time and he hasn't hired a lot of people, so that's like he has a full bank account. He has like, there's like everything in place, so now you can answer.
Just two things on that. Firstly, if you're thinking about maybe hiring someone, you've passed the point at which I would have hired. And secondly, no employee should cost you money. They're there to make you money.
Similar to what Chris said, like all my employees are revenue generators. So you've just got to see them not as a cost. It's an investment to either buy back your time or help you make more money. So whichever one it is. So like back-end team would be saving you time so you can focus on winning higher level clients and growing the business. Or revenue generating. So most of the other business people in your business should be able to contribute to revenue. It's probably just a fear, like internally, that's holding you back, limited belief, I would say. It's not going to be me telling you to hire, then you're suddenly going to hire. You need to, like, I think, have bigger goals in life. What is it you really want to create? Because, and who you're surrounding yourself with. So you were saying, like, if you've been at 30K months for quite a while and you've stacked up cash, that means you're in your comfort zone. And you don't want to get out of the comfort zone. You're in the nice warm clothing and everything else, and you're going to have to go again. So you need to have a under true fire burning desire to want to succeed. And one thing I've noticed with entrepreneurs that are maybe at your level is, do you really want to be a multimillionaire? Because it's okay just to stay where you are and live a good life and do that for the next 10 years. Do you want to be stuck at doing what you're doing for the next 5-10 years? If that's really a no, like you really need to dig into that pain, feel it, and force yourself to grow and hire. Don't overhire, for sure. Like, you want to make sure you get the... But the next hire you hire probably won't work out. So just be prepared for that. So maybe you do hire two with the view that one is going to work out. Because you haven't hired enough, you're going to have to hire and fire. So be comfortable knowing that you're going to hire someone, you're going to have to fire them, you're going to have to deal with that baggage again, then you have to go again. Like, business is going to be tough as you scale, but like to get really successful in life and business, you have to have a team, and that you have to do that at some point.
Is your hire in fulfillment or appointment setting?
Setting.
Okay, so let's say you're on a sales call. How much is your offer? Like if someone says yes.
Between 10 and 30K, but.
Okay, let's just say 10K. What's your closing percentage on average on a call?
Because the most leads are actually out of recommendation.
Sure, but still right now.
It's 80%.
Okay, so every time you get on a call, you're making minimum $8,000 in 1 hour. If you take a two-part close, it's 2 hours. You're making $4K an hour. So you now tell me, is it worth you paying someone $100 an hour, €100 an hour to appointment set for you? Fuck yes. So Matt, but what you need to hear probably, because if you're like me, I came from rural Ireland, my mom is broke, we had no money. So I need to see mathematically that it's crazy for me not to hire, because emotionally I'm not like, I need to see mathematically, this is a really stupid idea. So you can hire someone for 40 hours and it's still cheaper than an hour of your time on a call. And what does an appointment setter do? Book calls.
You are really successful in what you do, but success is always like failure to success. What are your key moments where you got this confidence, the main thing where you said, oh, this was one moment where I changed a lot of me, inside me, in my business, what drove me to where I am now and impacted my business as much that we can be there where you are now?
Yours is more logical. Mine's going to go down a rabbit hole of emotion. So you go.
And I'll be real with you on this. So not everyone's got what it takes, for sure. So there's different levels of entrepreneurship, for sure. So like some people are just designed to maybe run a 100K a year business, a 500K a year business, a million a year business, 10 million a year. So it depends on your stress level tolerance. So for instance, someone that like is like probably achieved everything in life as a man right now is Donald Trump. Like he's been successful in business and politics and is probably the world's most powerful man. I could not be Donald Trump, even though I look up to some of his attributes. I just haven't got the stress tolerance of like dealing with that every day, like all of the lawsuits, all of the stress and pressure. So I'm probably in the mid tier. Like I know I'll be worth maybe 100, 400, 500 million, maybe at some point. But then there's also people that maybe build for different things. So everyone's on their own journey. So it's not a case of comparing with other people. So I would just say like, it's just, yeah, like it's just a different, I can't put a pin on it. Like, as I go through my journey, everyone has a special uniqueness about all of you inside, and it just depends what that is. So some calling might be to inspire others and to be really well for you to give back, and some people might be just on the journey at a different style level. So I would say it just depends. Like, you're just going to find your own special uniqueness within and have a burning desire. So it does come down to your upbringing, which I'm sure Chris will touch on. Like my background, I didn't grow up poor, didn't grow up rich. We were lower middle class, but my mum, we always struggled for money, and I had to work, I had to do paper rounds, extra jobs, and always work. So that crux of like worried about money is like left in me now. So I'm still always like not worried about money, but checking my bank accounts, even though I've got millions now. It's like I'm still like obsessed with that. So it depends on your upbringing, because the most successful people that are like most of them are self-made. Yeah. So most billionaires or multimillionaires are self-made, but a lot of them have had a story from below. So you've got to really dig deep of like, what is your real purpose and what is that chip on your shoulder that's going to force you through the tough times of failure to be successful. So it's possible in all of you to find that, but you've got to unearth that. So whether that's time journaling, meditating, and really like, looking up to someone that you aspire to be. So I love reading autobiographies, and I read every single one that's not on the most popular ones on Amazon, but I'm digging deep of like, who are these billionaires and their stories? And I'm reading them at nighttime, and I'm planting these seeds in my head of like where my journey could become. But you've definitely got to go through for sure, like some failures in order to get there. And if I had to go and do it all tomorrow, I'd be like, fuck, like, that's tiring. If I could take myself back 10 years when I was first hustling my agency, going on to meet clients and trying to win my first 10K deal and then get fulfillment and get hires, it was long. And that's why I'm saying it's not for everyone. 99% of people, it just it's not possible to break through. Well, it is, but you've just got to have what it takes, and it is a lot of pain. It's definitely not like a magic pill for sure. And I can say that just coming from experience mentoring. Like, now we've had 1,200 agency owners through my program over the last 6 years. And I can, they've all been successful in some right, maybe getting to 100K to 400, 500K, yeah, but no one's really went past that. So is that because I'm special, or is it because they just haven't got what it takes, or whatever it is? I don't know. I just think everyone's got a different purpose in life. And we've also got to be careful on social media to think that we can all achieve some great heights. Yes, you can achieve anything you want in life, but are you prepared to do what it takes? It's probably the key thing. Like, it's not a quick hack or solution. It's being obsessed with making money every single day, being obsessed with personal development, working on myself every single day. So for some people, like my competition, they might go to bed, or they might go and go out on the drink, or meet friends, or spend time with family and the kids, which is totally fine. But they won't get that next level. Like, I'm still reading till 11 o'clock or midnight, or surrounding myself with other people all the time. So it compounds all the time. So you just, it's definitely a compound effect where it like goes steady, steady, steady in your business to like 40, 50, then all of a sudden you do get the hockey curve. That definitely happened with me. Like, throughout my journey, then now it just gets easier and easier to make money for me. But it's 10 years of like things you didn't see of the bullshit to get there. And that's normally the same story with most successful entrepreneurs. You'll see, like, you don't see all of the hard times and the slog, and then you don't see that. Like, if I could look back now and think I would be here, I'd be like, wow, okay, well, it is worth it and to do what it takes. But at the time, it's very hard to think, well, is it going to be worth it? Am I even going to get there?
For me, I grew up in rural Ireland. So everyone here's from Germany, Austria, a few other countries, yeah. My mom is disabled, single parent. She had four boys and I was the eldest. After my parents separated, my mom was in a very abusive relationship for 10 years. And basically my whole childhood was seeing her get almost kicked to death multiple times. So within me, it initiated I need to get my mom out of this place. So it wasn't an option. Like, for me, standing on stage talking to you guys is nothing compared to what I've been through before. Me going through difficult challenges in business is nothing compared to what I witnessed before. And that initiated a sense of, I'm the only person who can get us out of here, which put a lot of responsibility on my shoulders at a very young age. So obviously, if I could go back in time, I wish my mom didn't experience that, but it became my gift to go through. And we've all been through a different story. You know, we all have trauma. We all have something. We all have something, whether it's an insecurity, whether it's a breakup, whether it's something that's happened in our life. My advice is to, as Tony Robbins says, life happens for us, not to us. And find a reason, if you can, to dig deep into whatever has happened and use it as fuel. Because then, like James said, business is challenging. But when you reflect on things you have done before, so like, just think of what confidence, the word confidence means. The word confidence is how confident are you that you run a test and it's successful? Well, that's based on data. So your confidence standing up on stage is backed by psychological data that you have done something before and it's worked out okay. So you can't just, someone stands on stage and they've never spoken before, they've got nothing to speak about. That's delusion. That's delusion. It's not confidence. So when you back and layer successes that you have done on top of each other, you build confidence. And yeah, you just reinforce that over time. And then you start to realize that, well, I've dealt with all of this stuff. Someone somewhere has at least attempted this and been relatively successful. It's possible. So, but one thing that James said that I think is important as well is everyone, I believe, like, think of sprinting, for example. No matter how much sprint training I do, I will never run 9.58 seconds and beat Usain Bolt's record because I have a genetic potential. And I think we all as people have a business potential or a mindset potential. That's just my belief. Does that mean that you can't make 10 mil? Of course you can. And there's always, you know, you have a mil and you make a trade on some shitcoin and it goes to 10 mil. It's possible. But I think we all have a limit. And from my experience from being around my friends is that most business problems are a personal problem that manifests in your business. And I can say that now because an element of my childhood still holds me back from scaling ads. The guys were like, you guys are crushing it, just scale more. And in my mind, maybe similar to your challenge around hiring, I'm like, ooh, I'm trying to be too cautious, or I'm trying to be too clever, or I'm trying to get a better return before I scale. And I'm aware, being self-aware is useful, especially in business. I'm aware that that's something I need to work on. So I don't think things like that go away.
And I think like for confidence, like it stacks up. And the more you do, the more things you can check, the more boxes you can check, the more confident you get in certain topics. Like, for example, how to become the best bodybuilder in the world. I'm probably not the most confident person to talk about that, because like there are 20 people in the room that have a better shape than I. So I think it really depends on the area. Like if I'm in a club, I'm not the most confident person there, because it's not an environment where I feel like that's my environment. So I think it's like focusing on the environments you want and ticking the boxes there and getting more confident. Because if I talk about building sales teams, ads, whatever, I'm very confident. If I'm talking about how to invest the best in crypto or in real estate or whatever, I'm not the most confident. So I think like it comes down in focusing and a lot of having fire in yourself. Like, for example, we have very different motivations each other. Like everybody is different wired and everybody has different things that drive them. I think if you have yours, you just need, in my opinion, need to put it in a system where you are willing to push through every pain and not get distracted and understand where you need to work on, and don't get distracted.
If you have a dartboard and a dart, and I said, what's the probability you'll hit the bullseye? I don't know how good you are, but what I do know is if you threw it enough times, it would be unreasonable that you wouldn't come close. So if you do enough reps, and I know Alex Hormozi says this all the time, how many cold calls do you need to take for it to be unreasonable that you won't make money? How many times do you need to do X task higher for it to be unreasonable that you won't be success? And my academic background is math and science, so I'm very similar to James. I'm like, what's the probability that this will be successful? We'll do more, or make it unreasonable that you won't be successful, rather than the other way around, I think. But that comes from hard work.
And like if you have a problem, let's say, for example, when I started business, after 2 years we had like $50,000 in debt, and like many people would have given up, I think. And like one thing that I always knew is like I just try to solve the problem, however long it takes, it doesn't matter. I'm still focusing on the thing. And if it takes 1 year, nice. If it takes 5 years, nice. It doesn't matter to me. I'm going to fix it no matter what. And if you have an attitude around, let's say, your business problem, you have a certain problem and you want to scale to the next level. And as long as you're willing to try to do everything to fix that problem and not go around different areas and not give up and just focus on that, eventually you will get there. If it takes 2 months, nice. If it takes 6 months, nice. If it takes 1.5 years, okay. If it takes 3 years, it might take 3 years, whoever knows. But as long as you stay focused and don't get the shiny object and don't go to Thailand and take pills and whatever, then I think you're just on the right path. And then it takes time, whatever, as long as you have the right intention, the right focus, and do the right things, it's inevitable.
Since I work with Heartbeat, I'm scaling my business and I have new standards in my company. And many years ago, I hired a marketing officer. We built a good relationship and he helps me emotional through highs and lows. And I also hired my assistant employee, but she's my niece. I cannot fire her without getting stressed with my wife. But she's hardworking, she's intelligent, but she's 20 years old. She's a student, she's studying international business management, but she doesn't know what is her goal for her lifetime. But I want to take her by her hand and rise there in my business.
I mean, one, she's probably too young because she doesn't even know what she wants in life, which is going to be hard for you. And obviously bringing it in the family dynamic is making it tough. So I would say it's probably holding you and your business back more, because you're subconsciously thinking about her all the time and looking after her. And it shouldn't be your responsibility to pick her up and drive her. You need to drive your business first. when you've got big success, you could afford to maybe do that and throw money at it, yeah? But at the time in business startup mode or growth mode, you have not got time to take passengers. Ideally, you would try yourself to manage yourself out in that situation if you can. Maybe start giving it maybe just more part-time, bringing in someone else like as your assistant, because yeah, from my experience and what I've seen in other businesses, like it's probably not going to end well, because she's not going to work for you forever. Like if she's still only 20, she doesn't know what she wants. So,
and one thing I want to add to there, like one thing that James said is like it's on your subconscious mind. When we started Heartbeat, we had a company before with an ex-business partner, and we had a team there of, let's say, four people. It was four people. And me and my business partner decided whoever the team wants to go, we both wanted the team. And wherever the team goes, that the people come wherever they want to go. And my ex-partner was very self-confident, so he agreed to that. And the whole team came to me. So I had four people, and I had two setters that were very good. I had one person that was a tech person and one people that was a client success manager. So I had a very good team right away, perfect setup. And I can remember it was the most stressful month of my life, I think, because like we had a team, we didn't have a website, we didn't have positioning, we had no idea what to sell. And I had four people I need to pay the payroll that are hungry, I need to give them to-dos and need to think about it. And I can remember it was like on my mind all the time, and I was stressed, I wasn't productive. It was like sometimes you in your business, you know, when you have something on your mind, you can't think clearly and straight. And what James back then told me was like, get rid of the salespeople. You don't have a job for them. You don't have anything to do for them. The account managers served out themselves, so they had a different problem. And the two salespeople, I got rid of them. And I would say it was one of the best decisions I could make, because like if you have it on your subconscious mind, you don't have enough energy and focus for the right things. So if you have a lot of things that you have unsolved problems in your with your employees, some of them maybe with your partner or something else, I think it's really worth attacking those things, because they are on your mind, and we wouldn't have grown when we killed all the people and then build it up straight again. I didn't need the people that were on the team back then. And it was a way better thing to build it properly with good headspace instead of just, oh, I have the people now, I need to use them. And I had this FOMO, this fear of missing out. I have these good people. I will never find, it's hard to find people like that. But it was a very false thinking. And if it's on your subconscious mind and you know that, then it takes your energy, and that's not worth it.
You can't fire her though, right? Realistically, no, honestly, you probably can't. So if that's the case, because there's two things on your mind. There's she's not performing, so she's holding us back. Number one. Number two is I'm paying her and not getting much from it. I would say it's worth paying her to not get in trouble with your wife. But to solve this problem, it would be find a way that her underperforming isn't impacting the growth of the business. So let's just say we're selling ice cream. She creates the ice cream, I sell it, we make money. If she doesn't create the ice cream, someone else creates the ice cream, I sell it, we make money. If she's doing the selling, no one makes money. So try to find a way to, as James kind of said, move her into a position where if she doesn't perform, you're paying her, but you're basically paying her so that your wife isn't upset and you justify it somehow. But if she's holding the business back in growth, both of those situations remove the biggest problem, which is you thinking about it is probably more costly than what you pay her.
Okay. Yeah. You said your employees work with you, not for you.
Sure.
And it makes sense that I define my clear goals, communicate to all of my employees. They also have to define their goals in their lifetime, communicate it clear to me, and then we can take a look if we find a connection and work together.
Sure.
Or we figure out that makes no sense, and then I have no stress with my wife.
That's it. True. I mean, what I teach, what my business teaches really is high ticket sales and lead generation on LinkedIn. So the vast majority of my team are, virtually all of them are commission based. Even my CSM are commission based on how many clients they have and how many of them get upsold. So for me, I just need to make sure the math makes sense. And think of it this way. If you have a sales rep who wants to make more money and they're telling me that they're not making the money that they want, the solution is you get better at sales.
Yeah.
Now, unless I'm giving them terrible leads, then okay, then I'm responsible to a degree, but try to find a way that the math works. And reverse engineer. And for example, like if a closer comes to me, and I've hired quite a lot of appointment setters, dialers who will become closers, and I say, listen, what is the number you want to hit? And I tell them, well, mathematically, based on the units that we have, this is what you need to be doing a year from now to hit those numbers. How do we reverse engineer that? But the only thing preventing them from getting there is their ability. So when I communicate that to them, they realize that they are responsible for the money they make, not me, not the business. As long as the flow is sufficient so that, because also something that James mentioned at the start is that because my background is sales and we're talking about salespeople in that role, I know I could step into that role and make way more than they ever want to make in that role. So I can say directly to them, it's possible, I've done it before. And the only thing that would prevent you from getting there is your ability, not the system. So if you can find a way to communicate the responsibility is actually on them to get better, I'm more of a coach to my team because I'm coaching them to hit the targets they want to hit. And if they don't, then like the ice cream scenario, I'll hire someone else to come in and their poor performance fades them out to the point where, because none of my guys are on a salary, they're commission based. So if this guy's underperforming, he drifts out into, I'm not making enough money to continue. And I'm like, yeah, I see that.
I would like to ask you a personal question.
Sure.
Both of you. So let's say there are two hearts in my body where I just wonder, okay, I want to drive my business and it reached a goal. And
only which goal? Which goal? If you had to define that goal, what is that?
Well, that's another work we have to do, maybe.
Well, that's important though, because then you don't know where you're going. Yeah. And I don't mean that in a rude way. I mean, like, if you, so based on even the question, I could be wrong, but are you saying how do you find a balance between the life you want to live and the freedom you want to have and the growth of the business? It's how do you find a way to live the life you want to live with loved ones or however that looks and your business get to where you want it to go? I think it's important, firstly, to go into the future and go, what would my dream life look like? And there will be times, unfortunately, that you might need to sacrifice some of your personal life to get there. Because, you know, let's say if your goal is to get the business to 100K profit a month and you're very hands off, you can spend all the time you want with your family. But there might be a time where you need to sacrifice that to get there. But on the flip side, I see a lot of people sacrifice the most important things in their life to make money, and they want the money to spend it with the most important people in their life. Now, again, I didn't really have a proper family nucleus growing up, so my biggest goal was not to get a PhD or do other things or make loads of money. It was to have a family that I can provide for, support, and care for. I'm fighting every day for my future kids. It would be important, I think, to communicate to yourself, firstly, because if you don't know the goal of the business, you just getting from 40 to 80K, as James said at the start, doesn't serve you if your profit's still the same. You've got more people to manage, you've got more outgoings. If something goes wrong, sales don't come in, you could be in the minus. And for what benefit? So if you look into the future and look and go, let's say your business is running for 5 to 10 years, let's say 2030 to 2035. How does your business run for those 5 years? How would you like it to run? How many employees are there? What the profit margin is? What's your involvement? If any of you are unsure what that looks like, I wouldn't be booking a single appointment or closing another call or speaking to another client until you know that. Because otherwise, you're chasing everyone else's dream. And although Stefan will help you scale, there is a scale which is, I want to make the same amount of money but move out and have more profit. That's also a win. And everyone's scale or everyone's goal is different. I think if you redefine what that looks like 2030, then you go, okay, how far away from that am I? And what do I need to do to get there? I think you'll actually find that you don't need as much money as you think. Or at least you can, because for me, my goal was freedom. Originally freedom for my mum. And now freedom for me. So, I mean, it's quite, I took a lot of perspective from the way James runs his business. But if I jumped into my business and I was taking sales calls, we would maybe 2x, 3x the business tomorrow. But I am not willing to sacrifice my time for money that I don't need yet, if that makes sense. So redefining what success looks like for you in your business 2030. And reverse engineering it, I think, will allow you to at least weigh up the sacrifice that might be required. But I wouldn't lose sight of the most important things, which I'm sure is your family.
I consume so much, and it's really like ingrained. I'm really brainwashed. I think everything, the whole business stuff. But these 2 days here, the eye-opening thing was, I'm still trying to be clever, trying to find some shortcuts, trying to be as optimal as possible. How do I make this transition to just do and not be so worried, I guess?
When I look back, like that, I consume more now than I did back when I was growing my business, okay? So one of the key things that stays with me is that you've just got to do it. So a lot of people will have theory, but it's no good unless you put it in action. And the hardest thing, the more you read, the more you consume, that you're taking that mental bandwidth from actually just ringing another client, following up, delivering. So it makes you lazy. So the problem with the information age now, even compared to what it was like 10 years ago, it's 10x or more. So you want to consume less, I would say. And you need to force every single day you write in your planner, plan tomorrow today, and what your non-negotiables are. So at least if you can achieve 3 per day. So for me, it might be 3 pitches a week with a client. I want to win at least 2 clients a week, for example. Write that down every single day, because your pen to paper and put it in your mind and your subconscious is very important. You need to make that commitment. You need to make a certain amount of cold calls. You need to pitch a certain amount of people. You need to deliver on fulfillment. Like, these things are going to move the needle. And this is what I was saying, 95% of entrepreneurs just won't be successful because you've sort of got the theory in your head. And it's nice coming to these events and it's brilliant and it's nice consuming content, but you need to be obsessed with business and actually following through. Most people can't follow through as entrepreneurs because you need to have that burning desire that needs to fucking happen. Like, you need to make money. So looking at your bank account and seeing how not much money is in there, like where you want to retire on or what you want to achieve, that you have to be obsessed with. You need to be making money every single day, every single week, and hold yourself accountable by writing it down. So you need to see through your own bullshit that your other mind will... It'll give you this voice, oh, it's okay, you can do this tomorrow, or yeah, next week I'm going to launch this campaign, or I'm going to reach out to these clients, or like by next month I'm going to spend all this time like writing all these plans down. But it's just doing the actual work is the hardest thing. You have to be prepared to do it. Same as going to the gym when it's 6 a.m., it's black outside and it's cold. Like, you're not going to get a good body if you don't go to the gym. It's the same in business. It's the same thing. So you've got to see content and all of these things you're learning. These are a distraction as well. Like, if you actually just deleted all of that and just went to work and won some clients and focused on getting 100k net cash reserves in your bank, then you can maybe learn a little bit more. Then you go again. And then as you scale your business, you need more information and more mentors around you, because once you make a few million, then it's like there's different structures you need to create and different plans. But just to get the raw bones of starting your agency or growing your agency to 100k a month, it's literally just sheer hustle, hard work, and just putting in the inputs. So the less distractions, the better for you.
How many of you take your sales calls on a Zoom? Just hands up.
Everyone.
Okay. So considering that's the only way you make front-end cash, yeah? If I put a gun to your head now and said, no one's leaving this room until they book 5 appointments, put your hands up if you don't think you could do that. So you've all shown me that you can book 5 appointments. When you calculate your closing rate and your ticket price, everyone in this room has just showed me that they could make thousands of euros right now if they had a gun to their head. So why don't we wake up every day with that mind frame? Oh, I'm going to optimize this funnel, I'm going to redesign this offer, I'm going to do my email campaign, I'm going to do my drip sequence. There's only 2 things you really need to do. Like, forget about fulfillment, right? Book calls, close calls. Like, everyone over fucking complicates it. It's a simple mathematical equation of, on average, how much cash do you collect per call that you take? Okay? And then, simple math. Okay? Look at your show up rate. Every time I book a call, no one thinks of it this way. So let's just say you sell a 10K offer, right? And even if you close like 40%, yeah? Every time you get on a call, like, do the math. You're making, what, 4K? If the show up rate is even 50%, every time you book a call, you're making 2K. So if I put a gun to your head and said, could you book a call in an hour? You're like, okay, it's 2 grand. Could you do it again in another hour? 2 grand. Could you do it every day? Like, do you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just simple math. And I think what prevents us, exactly what James said, is we're trying to overcomplicate and do things that aren't bringing us money right now. Because if someone put a gun to your head and said, you need to pay a hospital bill for your mother who's sick and she's on the way out, we would all fucking make money. We wouldn't be overcomplicating it. So if we step into that person, and what I try and do with my our clients or my team is put a block in your day that is, I am just making money in this time. If a call is booked, you take it. If a call isn't booked, there's only one other thing you can be doing is booking calls, booking appointments, and trying to find the most efficient way. So if you want to break that down even further, if I have an hour to book an appointment, what are you going to do? I wouldn't send an email blast, personally. I would reach back out to ex-clients, people who got on a call with me and didn't close for whatever reason. The warmest people, who are the most likely people to give me money. And every single day, I've got an off-the-call SOP for my team. If off-the-call is if there's no call booked or there's a no-show, they go through in order which is the most likely people they can book in to get on a call who are most likely to give us cash. It's a very simple strategy. If that's all you guys take from anything I've said, I think that will be useful.
And also maybe one thing to add to that is if Chris or James says they want to do something, they do it. So you need to train yourself like a dog to, if you want to do something, you do it. You just train yourself to be the person you if you say something you do it. And if you have that one skill, I promise you it's not possible to not scale your business. If you just have the skill of saying you want to do something and doing something. And then having just pure focus, deleting Instagram off your phone, YouTube off your phone, TikTok off your phone, doesn't serve you. And just stop consuming crazy stuff because it just gives you shiny object syndrome instead of execution syndrome. And you want to have execution syndrome where you execute the relevant Murad.
So I can relate a lot to what you said. My background is education, and I'm always trying to be more clever. And what I realized is as James said, I'm talking myself out of doing the thing to try to find a more clever way, and I end up just doing fucking nothing at all. And one of the lessons of being around our friendship group, and a lot of you will follow Alex Hormozi, it's just keep it simple. Like if I see something, I'm like, how can I simplify this? How can I simplify this? So you could find a more optimal way of doing it, but you don't need to if you can just double down on whatever you're doing right now. So as he says, do more, do better, do new. So if you can just do more, then when you can't do more, do better. And when you can't do more and do better, then try something new.
If you think you have good employees in your team, but they don't have a goal like me, so they don't have to focus, I have to do that, whatever, or they have a goal, but you're not confirmed with that goal, are they good employees? Mm. If yes, how can I bring them to a goal or maybe change the goal from A to B?
Very similar to us giving advice to you in terms of figuring out what you want to do and how you're going to get there. So I don't coach our clients anymore. I coach employees. I don't sell our clients anymore. I sell people on the ability to work for us. So I treat our employees as the way some of us would teach our clients. So my goal is to try and find a way that, you cannot project. If let's say you were my client, I can't project to you your goals just because it serves me. So I need to figure out and redefine where that is and find a place for you in the business so the business can still succeed based on your goals. And like the ice cream scenario, if you're going to plateau at a certain point, and I've had closers before who are killer, but they only want to do 4 calls a day, and I can make a decision to go, well, I don't want you, or I can go, you can take 4 calls a day, I'll just hire someone else to take another 4. I would never try and project someone's goals and someone's views onto them. You can try and figure out what their drivers are and make them see it in a different way. But ultimately, when shit hits the fan, like it's their drivers that are going to drive them. And it's normally to do with the people that they love and the life that they want. If you need to open their eyes to it in a different way, that's different. And what roles are they? Are they appointment setters or closers or fulfillment?
Yeah.
Video guys, video editors.
Yeah, but they don't want to be successful. They're an employee. So not everyone's going to be an A-play employee that wants to be a millionaire and drive the business as good as you. Yeah. So these are workers for you, and that's okay. Like sometimes they don't have, like all my employees, like I don't know some of their goals. I know the goal is like they work 9 to 5, they get paid a good salary, they enjoy the culture, enjoy what they do, and that's it. And that's cool. That's fine.
What videos are they creating? Ads, content, or fulfillment videos?
He has a video video creation company where he creates videos, nice videos.
Okay. Oh, I understand. I understand. You so they create videos for your clients.
Yes.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. If you want to double your business, you're not even going to look at them. Am I wrong? You're going to look at getting new clients and closing new clients. So if this, I would try and reframe that the bottleneck in your business probably isn't them. And if it's a case that you need to hire more of them, you cross that bridge. But if I put a gun to your head and said, you need to double your revenue, you're not even thinking about them, I would say. And if they've reached like max potential that they're willing to work at, you just hire someone else. But what's your restraint, I'm guessing, is getting new leads and closing new people. And if you focus on that, you'll make enough money that will, when you have enough money, like that's a friend of ours, Copy Charlie, said to me once a long time ago, he went to one of the richest schools in the UK. And when I became friends with him, his dad was an extremely wealthy guy. One of his dad's friends said to Charlie when he was really, really young, he said, when you throw enough money at a problem, it normally goes away. And I never had money, so that stood out to me. But it kind of is true. Like, there's value in that. When you're making more sales and you're booking more appointments and you've got more cash, stuff like that becomes a lot easier to solve.
The only thing I would add to that is, like, for example, if your video production system is inefficient and the employees are too expensive for the pricing you ask for, and you're asking high pricing already, and they are just inefficient, let's say one person does the work of half a person, then you need to kick them harder, but they don't need to have your goals.
I've got a question about your education. You said you're reading 5 hours every day. How much sleep do you get every night?
Always eight hours to 9 hours.
Okay. Do you have like a special procedure, what you're repeating every day?
Always starting the day with meditation has been important for me for the last decade, 10 years I've meditated. And that keeps me grounded and more spiritual. And then planning today, tomorrow, I always have my notebook journal every day, and then I go for a coffee. I don't do any emails. I don't do any meetings before 1 p.m. Okay. I mean, my life is a little bit different now as an agency. Like when I was like in an agency, I was up at 6 a.m., for example. I was listening to a motivational audiobook. I was reading for an hour. I was like writing down my goals and planning tomorrow today and all of these type of things. But like now it's probably less. But yeah, always making sure I get enough sleep for sure, and starting off with meditation, then a walk, gym, coffee, plan what I'm going to work on in the business, and always just trying to move the needle forward. And I think Stefan reflected back on what I enjoy doing in my business is, if I'm not contributing to revenue myself, like maybe creating a new offer or helping like drive the business forward, I just don't feel fulfilled. Like I've got a full team that self-manages now. In my diary, I maybe work 4 to 6 hours a week, but I still work around that time, but I just choose when I want to work and what I want to work on. But for you guys, it should just be like, for the first 5 years of my business, it was making sure I won 3 new clients every single week, because I knew a client would be worth either 10,000 to like 50, 60,000 pounds a year to my agency. So that was like my number one goal. If I brought that in for the team and then the team delivered, then that was my main goal. So I was always the face and brand of the business, which you should be, and you're leading with the sales. Chris was saying, for fulfillment, it doesn't really matter. Like they're just workers, as it were. Like, don't be scared that your employees aren't going to be entrepreneurs. And ideally, you don't want entrepreneurs in your business. Because if so, like they're just going to steal your IP, go off and do something themselves anyway. So you want just good B players when you start your business. Obviously, you'll see lots of training and people talking about hiring A players. I'll be honest, you're probably not going to be able to hire an A player at the start, because why the hell would they work for you? Your business needs to start to be successful first. You need to have a proven track record and be part of something big and great that they want to be part of. So you need to become that person first to attract an A player. At first, you're going to get C players and B players, and that's okay, as long as they're doing a good job and they're contributing. But try and move everyone, even on fulfillment, I would try and incentivize them for delivery with each client, and they get a bonus, whether it's 200 euros, 500 euros. Try and get them incentivized. Like the better they do and the more they perform, the more money they make. And that's what I've got with every single employee in all my businesses, is like they've got some sort of goal they can work towards, whether it's like a monthly like bonus for employee of the month or like the most delivered on whatever it is on the back end.
How do you treat your employees in sales like this? You sell them back to their goals, you say, hey, you want to take care of your family, of your mother, but your motherfucker don't perform. So when I put a gun on your head, appointments.
Yeah, you're on about people who book appointments for me or people who close, or both?
No, that book appointments for me.
Figuring out their why, like figuring out like why they want money, like figuring out why they want money, what they need to be hitting and why, and then trying to understand when we're speaking to a potential client, you're transferring belief to them. Sales is a transfer of belief. So we're transferring a future self that we tell them is possible to them and they make the sale. When they're underperforming, let's say an appointment setter, understanding why, because it might not be a lack of trying, it might be a lack of skill that needs to be improved. So I look at, is it either a lack of effort or industriousness, or is it a lack of competence? And understanding which of those it is makes it easier. So, but again, if it's a lack of competence, that's easily solved because we're a teacher and we should be teaching them to get better. If it's a lack of industriousness, then over time, you need to address what the expectations are for this role. And I always, anyone read Relentless by Tim Grover? Yeah. So I read that book and it made me two things. It made me feel a little bit more accepting of myself being different, but it also allowed me to look at the way I treat my team differently. And there's a chapter in that book that talks about, beforehand I was like bubble wrapping my employees, and now I'm very much like, well, if you don't do it, someone else will. And having other people competing for the same role, I've found to be useful. And playing them off against each other, as James said, is like rewarding people that are performing. But a lot of my appointment setters one day want to be closers. Not all, but some of them. So if their goal is to be a closer and they can't sell, for me, booking an appointment is a sales role. They have to sell the idea of someone spending 15 minutes on a call with us. I'm like, if you're unable to sell this idea to this person, how on earth are you ever going to ask for 10K on a phone? So for me, understanding whether it's a lack of industriousness or competence helps. If it's a lack of industriousness, it just requires like, why is that the case? So if I said to an appointment setter, I'll pay you $1,000 an hour, would they do it?
Yeah.
Sure. And do you think they would work harder? So if I can improve their competence and they can see that they're making money, their industriousness normally improves. If they feel like they're spending hours and hours and hours getting nowhere and they're getting deflated, most of us are less likely to work harder. So often I found, yes, motivating is important, but the more I drum down or drill the skill so that they're more efficient with the time that they do give, that works. So basically I will tell them they have X amount of hours to book X amount of appointments. And if they book that number of appointments in their first 2 hours, take the rest of the day off. That's something we do, because then they're, oh, I'm going to good appointments. If the quality of the appointments drops. So I want them to be incentivized to hit the goal. And if I need to adjust the goal upwards, fine. But that's an open to goal analogy that we have with our team. So if they book a certain amount of appointments that are above a certain threshold of, for example, every appointment setter that I have, we calculate the every day how many appointments they book. And at the end, we have their live show-up rate. So there's four numbers at the end. The amount of calls they have booked that month, the amount of calls they have booked that should have shown up, the amount that actually showed up, and then a calculation of their show-up rate live every day. So if their show-up rate drops, then I don't care how many appointments that they're setting, because they're not efficient. So I want to encourage them to see the data, track their data, make sure it's above the minimum requirement show-up rate. And that's been a very useful way for them to take responsibility. But I also never hire appointment setters anymore. I hire closers that start through the appointment setting process. So they know, they see a goal beyond appointment setting. Because, and that doesn't always happen. We've had some people who came to me as a closer and they became an appointment setter. And I said, yeah, once you're at a level, you can close. and that was a year and a half ago, and he's at the level, he's just happy appointment setting. One thing James said to me maybe 6 months ago, which has turned out to be true, like a lot of James's advice, was that if you burn them or you get them to work too hard, they burn out and disappear. And it's harder to replace people if they're appointment setting or dialing especially. So I've tried to find a way in which my best dialers can be more efficient with the best leads, and I pay them a little bit to train the other appointment setters or the other dialers because they're good, but they're not doing hundreds and hundreds of dials every day. And a lot of the people that are doing, let's say, the more of the appointment setting are the people who are on the climb up. And I've just found that if I try and put too much pressure on the best people to do more, they're kind of like, yeah, it's trying to find a good balance, I would say. But
what is too much pressure?
Everyone's different.
Yes,
yeah, so everyone's different. For example, I was speaking to a guy yesterday who, I don't know what numbers you guys are used to, but I was speaking to a guy who has been trying to dial for us for about a year. But he was dialing for a client of mine before, so there was a conflict. And I said, go away for some time, and then, you know, in the future, we can have that conversation. And this guy was dialing like 700, 800 dials a day, which for our industry is a lot. He's a unique person. He's a unique specimen, and he's good. So he's going to come back in, and I have other people who are doing like 200 dials a day at a push. So everyone's different, you know, but... again, I hate to keep coming back to the ice cream analogy, but if each of you are making ice creams and giving it to me to sell, and you're giving me 100 a day and you're giving me one a day, considering I'm only paying you on commission, I don't care. Like, you'll be stuck making, you know, a 100th of him. So I have no problem bringing in dialers, provided that they're hitting the bare minimum, if I'm only paying them commission only, because... it's an additional person. Now, obviously, if I could have more of you, I would remove him because it's bandwidth in the team. But again, that's a hiring process all of the time. But again, James is more experienced. Well, both of these guys are more experienced than I am, I would say, at hiring.
Is it on an appointment setter?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I just hate appointment setters. So. I just haven't got the time to manage them, and they're just a nightmare. So, like, they're probably the worst people to hire. I mean, I've got three good setters now, but I've had to go through so many. So you're going to waste so much time and energy. Just go and win new business yourself. Like, email marketing, video outreach, LinkedIn selfie videos, go to events, like, attract clients that way. Building a setter team, you need to be full-time. Like, Chris and Stefan are great at that, but you need to be an expert. So you need to be good in terms of, like, training them, doing outreach with them, like critiquing the calls every day, holding them accountable. It's a full-time job.
Just on that, my funnel is very different. If I could have James's setup, I would take it, but we don't have a lot of calls that get booked in. All of our calls get booked in from a dial. So we run an ad to a free school group that I would say is, I know everyone says it's better than our competitor's paid group, but it's pretty good. And we get people in there, and then they get dialed. Did you get access? Then we try and get them booked on a call. I think the thing that makes it significantly easier for me to hire those people is I've managed James's sales team at one point, Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street. I've managed his sales team for 9-10 months. I've done that for a lot of celebrity sales teams. So a lot of these people come to me because regardless of what they get paid, they know they're going to learn a lot. And that may not be applicable to you guys, but that's something that I incentivize them with. Even if you don't make money, you're going to learn. So that's been useful. So I still think a perspective of, well, if you come here, worst case scenario, you'll make a little bit of money. You'll learn a lot more than what you're currently doing. And if you decide to go off and do something else into the future, then at least you have that experience. I find that to be useful, but as James said, it is a full-time job, really. Like, it's a big thing.
Last question, Max.
So we have a recruiting agency, and we have the challenge that clients drop out or drop off when they have no more vacancies. How do you?
Who drops off? Sorry.
The clients drop off.
Yeah.
No more vacancies. And how do you develop backend products and increase lifetime value?
Obviously, I run two recruitment agencies, so. I understand where you're at with this. So the idea is you want to target a Dream 100 client. So what I would say is you need a client that will have repeat business. So what type of niche roles are you filling? Like, what is the job title of the
craft and industry?
So I would look at those companies, what else they need help with hiring, because they don't just want them, okay? So you might set up a back office team that you can help or the accountant team, but you want to, so it's very, if you're just winning spot business all the time, it's very, very hard to scale your recruitment agency because you have to win new clients all of the time. So for instance, in my agencies, for example, like once I won 100 clients, even now to this day, the last 3-4 years, I haven't been in that business at all. We're still doing business with clients I won 5-7 years ago, because they needed software engineers, they needed testers, they needed project managers, they needed finance people, and we are the partner they know, like, and trust now. So you need to make sure when you're mapping out your niche in your agency, it might not be carpenters, it might be a different type of niche within that industry where you can have repeat business. For you to scale your agency, you have to be able to have repeat business, because you won't have time to keep winning new business all of the time, doing one placement, then finding another client. Because then you have to understand their hiring needs, what they're like, how many interview processes it is, push the candidate across the line, build a relationship. You spend all that time and energy, then you don't make a placement again. Then you wait till that carpenter leaves 2 years down the line. So you need to make sure you're picking a niche that is got repeat business. Otherwise, you won't be able to scale the agency past probably 40, 50K a month. And then you're going to have to hire salespeople to help win more clients, which I don't advise in recruitment agencies. You should be the face and brand of your business. You're the one that's out there winning each client, bringing them on board, and then you've got your recruiters, delivery team that are filling the positions. So you can still do some spot business, but you really need to have at least 10, 15, 20 clients that you know they're going to hire 5-10 times a year with you. So it might be 3 carpenters, and it might be other different roles that you can fulfill. So then you need to improve the fulfillment team to make sure they can find different candidates in different niches fast. So using LinkedIn automation, using like marketing outreach skills that can do video outreach to attract candidates faster. So building your candidate fulfillment system, so then you can win a client that can fill multiple roles.
All right, I think we are finished. First of all, thank you so much for your time. It was very pleasurable.